Excellent. Well, let's move to our next show, Reinhard Mucker, up the road in Luring Augustine Gallery. And I think, Raphael, we have perhaps the opposite of the sensation of Aldrich's conceptual and stylistic promiscuity in the kind of rigor and determination of the Mucker form, don't we? What do you make of his work? Where do you place yourself with it?
I still remember so clearly in my first encounter with one of his works. It was in Paris at the Centre Pompidou in 1985 or 86. There was a show of Mucker's work, and at this point he was making installations with objects he found within the museum. So he had built these enormous structures with aluminum ladders and tables and chairs and neon lights and electric fans and all manner of things that he would just provisionally assemble into these objects, structures that were part kind of monument, maybe a part Ferris wheel, carousel, but very clearly referring to the space around them. And I've never, there was one of my kind of early, just as I was beginning to write about art, one of my early most powerful experiences. And then I've had very few chances to see his work since that, and he shows very rarely here. And his work has changed a lot. He no longer works with this kind of assemblage of materials at hand. But there's so the work is, I think, much more, has a more melancholy feel to it. But I think this work is about history, big and small. And like the big history is Germany, and there's a lot to be said about that and how this work engages German history. And then the small history is the history of the materials and techniques that he uses. And I think that, he's very different kind of artist from Richard Aldrich. And yet there is something that this work doesn't tell you everything about itself. There are secrets within it, but the kind of engagement you have with those secrets is very different, because for one thing, the amazing amount of skill and technique and careful attention to detail astounded me, kind of how much time I could give to each one of the pieces in this exhibition, with one exception.
Mm-hmm. One exception. Well, we'll come back. We'll come back to the one exception, whether it was the choo-choo train or not. But Becky, it is. I think I had very much the same experience at one level of Raphael of being in the presence of an extreme. Finesse and craft and formalism on the one hand, and a very deep sort of pervasive melancholy and a sense of possibly reading or overreading by the fact of his Germanness, the connotations for me as a Jew looking at this show. It's very hard to see a show this much about railways in Germany and not think of the Holocaust. Where did you find yourself? Did you find Mucker primarily promoting aesthetic intrigue or historical and emotional sort of resonance?
A little bit of both, I think. I mean, I also walked in and immediately sort of reacted to the materials and the kind of incredible carpentry that I was seeing. I mean, peeking back and just seeing all of this sort of intricate carpentry. And then I was surprised to learn, I asked someone who worked there about the process, and she said that they were in fact all fabricated. So that sort of shifted it to me, because my first thought was, wow, it's like someone had collected a lot of things from antique stores and got a huge gift certificate to Home Depot and then went crazy. Because there's so much hardware in the show that, and I kept sort of thinking about what were these objects intended to be used for? What is their function? Because it seems like with that much hardware, there would be a function. And then I would have this realization, oh wait, this is art, there doesn't need to be a utility per se. And I kept having that sort of back and forth with myself. That was my first reaction.
So trains, Dennis, what do we make of his train obsession? And does it rub off? Do the trains move us? Where do the trains move us?
You know, I had like several stages of reaction to the show. And I'm like Raphael, I hadn't really seen any of his work before. So, and this is a great lesson, you know, I looked it up before I went on the gallery's website and I saw these vitrines and stuff and I thought, oh gosh, overbuilt, blah, blah, blah. And then when I went there, it's just, it does really pull you in. There are these really old things. They're, you know, encased in, you know, very new construction, like little artifacts. And at first I started thinking this is sort of nostalgic. And then there's like this undercurrent of, you know, like you said, a melancholy. And I definitely, you know, started feeling that. And then I happened to read like part of the press release that talked about how the whole train system of Germany and the Holocaust, and there was, and suddenly it was like, am I really just being manipulated to, you know, have another kind of, this is important because it was about the Holocaust experience. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was kind of, again, brought up, like, who is the audience and what is the expectation for somebody's reading? And I feel that there wasn't, despite the idea that you could read it in a lot of ways, I think in the end you came down to being there to acknowledge the, you know, Germany's role in the Holocaust kind of thing, with this whole architecture of, you know, destruction and this whole recontextualization of stuff. But still, I think there is like a definite emotional feeling that happens with these.
Yeah. Well, I concur with much of what's being said. I don't know how much real pleasure I was getting from the hardware finessing, but I actually would now like to find out from Raphael what the piece was that failed him, because I actually thought, in a way, the large piece with the actual trains moving through rusty pipes was both a sort of apotheosis of everything else and something else rather different, something else entirely. Which was the piece then that was the big exception for you?
Before I answer that question, I just wanted to say two things. My understanding, and I'm not sure whether it's right or not, is that he does a lot of the work himself, and he doesn't rely on a lot of them, that it's not fabricated outside of the studio, but I'm really not sure about that. That's just what I got from reading.
Because I asked, and she said that he works with a builder, and that she used the word fabricated. So, and I was sort of surprised because it felt the kind of carpentry felt very particular. So that's what she said.
So anyway, but it's interesting also to like
the plans in the back room. The back room is a very dense pieces made out of. I mean, it's a piece in itself, and at the same time, it is like a drawing show. I mean, a preparatory work show, and a very much retrospective. And it shows a fanatically detail-oriented. It seemed to me a lot of special pleading, actually, in the drawings. Look how much work I've done to to get where they are. They're not improvised kind of thing. But this is going to be the evening where David Cohen asks Raphael Rubinstein questions, and the answer is always, I'm going to ask, say something else. So now tell me.
Point taken, David.
So no, that's fine, but I do want to know. We're all on tenterhooks here. Which is the piece that compromises, or which is the piece that's the exception?
The piece with the actual toy trains going around It was the only freestanding piece, not the only freestanding piece, but most of them were wall-hung pieces. I thought that made too explicit the reference to trains. And I also, in contrast to Dennis, I didn't feel that he was kind of hitting me over the head with allusions to the Holocaust. I mean, I think that they maybe were there, but I don't feel that that was heavy-handed. But I think that why does that piece not work for me? And I thought one of the reasons is that you know, you don't get the train content or the train references directly through looking at the other pieces. They're sort of there.
Almost. Well, they're all called tracks, I think.
They're all named after railway stations.
But they don't, you're right, they're named after railway stations, but they don't actually look like trains. It's more metaphorical, and I think that was, for me, one of the problems. And then I think also it's just that the structural complexity of the wall pieces seemed to be absent in that in the piece. Also, that there was a radio playing, and there was a guard making sure you didn't try to, steal the trains or
jump on them or play with them. Yeah.
Though
yeah.
I saw that the second time I saw that show, it was just after the train derailment on the Metro North line. And I actually, that affected the way I was thinking about trains. It was the day after that.
Mm. Yeah, that's certainly art imitating life or life imitating art. Yes, actually the train piece, and I'm sorry for just calling it that, I don't remember its title, but it had those strange ropes all around them, which at first one wondered if it was just the gallery trying to protect the trains, but then clearly were part of the work. And but again, some of the details, I found that the pipes there are just very endearing. I mean, they were just weird and funny at the actual rusty pipes through which formed the tunnels but it became actually very literal. And whereas I think, Raphael, I agree with you that in the other works, although there are train timetable case between type things and the kind of details that you get in functional but public spaces, in the vocabulary, it's more subtle and more illusory, and it does become very literal, doesn't it, with the actual train.
I think Raphael has a really great point, and it made me think about how I had a certain expectation of movement in the other things. I kept thinking, well, is something going to happen with these? And of course, nothing does happen, but it made me also think of the idea of waiting at a train station or waiting for something to happen. And the whole idea of history and the role of, you know, waiting or expectation for something to happen. I think either that piece sets all that in motion or ruins it. I don't know which one.
Great. Well, let's see what our audience makes of these two shows then. Mucha and Aldrich. Different ways to deal with CHs. Yes, Blake. This is before our first questioner. I'm just going to take note of the fact that on this miserable night, where the art world is supposed to all be en masse in Miami, it's rather cheering to see so many past and future review panel participants actually sitting in the audience rather than up here on the podium. So I'll take the opportunity to acknowledge Blake Gopnik, Christina Key, Joan Waltermat, and possibly someone else who I'm not seeing. So, but yes, sir, your question. Comment.
About the Mucha show, I have to admit that when I walked in, I was sort of overwhelmed by the sense that it was Chelsea art. It had the kind of scale and lavishness of what I'm used to seeing in Chelsea. It felt sort of like SUV art. It felt overscaled and very expensive and over-engineered for what it needed to do. I just had this overwhelming sense of the Chelsea art market spending its money to produce incredibly lavish objects. It reminded me more of kind of Pompeii history paintings of the 19th century than of anything else. And I'm wondering if anyone else had that feeling of a kind of ostentatious luxury pretending to be high art in a sense.
I thought of that when I saw it on the internet, but not when I saw it in person. I mean, I think it was, you know, there was a little bit of that, but it was so complex and so unexpected and such, you know, disjunctive things between the actual objects in the vitrines and even the way the certain things were cut like cross sections that made you kind of explore it as an abstract sculpture. But just seeing, without seeing it in the gallery, I felt that.
The scale is what sort of was a problem for me, and the what seemed to me clearly fabrication, just the amount of money spent on producing luxurious objects that will only fit in a 20,000 square foot apartment.
But they weren't very luxurious.
I'm surprised by your response, Blake, because actually they're quite arte povera. They're quite grubby. They're recycled new material. They're not new materials for the most part, although the hardware putting them together may be, but I almost felt somebody's sort of vandalized or ripped off a nice old railway station or something. But as for the scale, I mean, I'm familiar with his work from German museums, where they are the right scale for museum works. I mean, they're certainly smaller than the average Anselm Kiefer that one would see in a museum, or even a Joseph Beuys. So it didn't seem like the kind of work you took home to your living room anyways. So, and what would be the right scale then? I mean, what would be the right size for that scale? I mean, it is supposed to be an environmental type experience. I don't agree with you. I think the scale is a bit, maybe like a Keenholz installation. I think that they are to be experienced as potentially life-size things, so that they're not depictions. A depiction can be any size and have scale in it. But if it's not a representation of something, but is a thing in itself, then its size is axiomatic, right?
Are you suggesting that maybe it's like, there's no doubt that it's like capital A art? I mean, you're not mistaking it for a potted plant. Oh, that's art. But, you know, that this is like, it's meant to be experienced as art, and it's very serious, and a lot of money was spent. I do understand that, but I think that it rises to, you know, to that.
It's interesting because in some sense, I think to tie it back to the Aldrich a little bit, it seems like the exact opposite of Aldrich in so many ways, because it's so produced and so much time and so much material. But in fact, upon sort of reading more about it, it also has a kind of provisional quality that surprised me in terms of the fact that he actually switches elements of the works around a lot in these sort of freestanding pieces that were in front. They had been individual works, and he sort of combined them for this show. And he's often taking parts of things and changing them. And the woman I spoke to at the gallery said she's pretty sure that he'll reconstruct that train piece, you know, later. So that sort of put it into a new light for me, because it that was sort of my first impression, a little bit similar to yours, that it felt so kind of produced. And but then, in fact, it was more of a living process in a certain way. And then the whole back room sort of attests to that, where he's showing us all these kind of fragments of past works and past installations, similar to Aldrich in a certain sense.
And also, I think just from what little I know about him, he hasn't shown here in 15 years. I think he's an artist he's not someone who's kind of producing new shows and trying to ease his work as smoothly as possible into marketplace. My impression is that it's just the opposite. He actually complicates things and makes things very difficult for galleries and for museums too. He has a almost antagonistic relationship to these systems.
Right. Excellent. Okay.
When I walked in, I felt like you could have this kind of Chelsea art experience just as on a very superficial level, and when I first encountered it. But what kind of amazed me as I got in there is as I started looking at the pieces a little more carefully, and I'm not that patient of a viewer, in fact. I like my MO is like I go in and I want to trash it, right? And then I wait for the piece to resist me and give me a reason why I can't trash it. And I found there was a lot of resistance in that work for me, and I got really caught up in just looking at all of the decisions that were made in the making of the things and feeling like there was no easy way to account for what all of these decisions were. And so I kept looking at it and puzzling over it and thinking, like, I had a similar experience when I first saw Matthew Barney. Like, I felt like, oh, here's something like that. We just came over the crest, and there's something new that we're being confronted with in terms of the way somebody's presenting an object to us and asking us to think about it. And that was really compelling for me. And I also got really involved in, like after a while, I looked around and was like, what is he doing with all these stools? You know, there's, like, stools everywhere and all these pieces. And it seemed like, in a way, a very heartfelt attempt for a German artist to try to come to terms with the legacy of Germany. And I think only somebody that's German can really understand the weight and the burden of being born into that culture. So I appreciate that honesty.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
He said that the footstools are actually metaphors for artists, for the artist. He says footstools and wedges to hold open front doors, and he kind of identifies himself as in this very sort of lowly kind of base function.
Let's see if there's some comments on Richard Aldrich, the show we opened with. Anybody want to share some comments on Aldrich? Yes.
Yeah, I'll just say one thing. I saw the show for the first time last night and went right from there to the painting show that was just opening at Ed Thorpe. And in both cases, pretty good paintings, I felt. And yet, being at the Thorpe show, I found myself really missing that larger problem.
So a more traditional gallery in some ways, or a gallery where collectors who take things home with them, it doesn't have the same dynamic of the problematics and the theory behind can one paint or not, whereas in a huge industrial, ex-industrial space like Bartolami, not that Ed Thorpe's space isn't also ex-industrial, but you know, a bigger, more museum-y kind of space that with the ghosts of what's been there before, there's more of that dynamic than of conceptual questioning. Okay, rather than implicit in the work. Is that?
You know, I found Aldrich's painting surprisingly compelling, you know, as I looked at it gave back. And then, you know, I mean, it is that odd risk of that huge empty wall and the spacing between it. It's either incredibly precious or brave. And I, last night, for whatever reason, I felt it was brave.
Excellent. Okay.
Can I just respond? You know, I think you're really on to something with that, because a short time after I saw the third Aldrich show, I saw the Patricia Tribe show. And I think that there's some real relationship going on in the paintings, like how the paintings establish their pictoriality when Aldrich is painting. But there is something a little less complacent about Aldrich's work. And I do think that, as irritating as that is, it's the kind of thing that makes you keep wanting to see, well, what's he going to do now, sort of. So I think that's a good comparison.
Okay.
I feel like the irritant is intentional there, and that he's problematizing the situation. I don't think the question is, can one paint? He paints so easily, and he's such a big talent. But I think he does, to respond to what Becky Brown said, I think he edits a real lot, because he could knock out easy paintings all day long. But and I thought of that Joe Brainard line, that art is walking down the street saying, hey, look at that. and that idea of including the world and including even what it is to present work in a gallery as part of the subject made it more interesting.
Fantastic. Great. So a couple of positive responses to Aldrich from the floor. Very welcome.